Hello, welcome to the Energy Question with David Blackman. I'm your host, David Blackman, and my very special guest today is Chuck McConnell, who is the Energy Center Officer at University of Houston Center for Carbon Management in Energy. Chuck, welcome. Thank you very much for doing the show.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here, and appreciate you being able to get all that into that title. That's an awful lot of words there, David.
I had to read it. I couldn't memorize it.
You bet.
No, but it's an impressive title. I know you're doing some fantastic work at UH, and that's really what we're here to talk about, is the work you're doing in the environmental space with carbon capture at UH, the research, and also the work you're doing as part of the advisory board for the Carbon Neutral Coalition, which is a group here in Texas that we'll talk about in a minute that's doing some very important work in that area as well. And in fact, before we get into the Q&A, why don't you just take a minute to tell our viewers and listeners about the work you're doing at both at UH and with the Carbon Neutral Coalition.
Well, at UH, we, about 5 years ago, were challenged by our Energy Advisory Board, made up of some 30 different companies from various aspects of the business community here in Houston that are the Energy Advisory Board for the University of Houston. And to an organization, they were all challenged by the upcoming aspects of carbon management. What is it going to require? How will we address those challenges? What kind of capabilities will we need? And I think they all recognize that the partnership they have with the University of Houston was essential because there's a lot of capability, a lot of capacity within our organization to help in that cause. And for us, of course, it's an opportunity to have industry very interested in the work that we're doing, perhaps even shaping and crafting some of the thrusts in which we want to move forward, because it's important that your research be relevant and impactful, not just fun to do stuff for science sake, but in fact, the ability to actually have it implemented in the marketplace. So with that, the university made a determination that they wanted to create this Center for Carbon Management. And that's when I came on board almost 5 years ago. The idea being that we would take the internal work of our science, engineering, policy, business, and law schools and marry them up in a center of capability so that the external world, those industry folks that I mentioned and others, could tap into the university in an effective and efficient manner. And that's a challenge, of course, at any university to find that kind of cohesive organization to come into. And so that was the genesis of why we started it. And the Carbon Management Center is dedicated to one single principle in terms of carbon management, and that is a term we define as energy sustainability. And let me just take a moment to describe what that means to us. Yeah. It means that energy is available and reliable in a ubiquitous manner to all people. Secondly, that it be affordable and cost competitive. And thirdly, that it be environmentally responsible. And we make sure that we hit that note every time, because you can't just decide to pick one or two, but ultimately the goal is to be able to achieve all three. And if you can do that, then you can actually move sustainability forward in terms of carbon management so that we can have something that's going to impact positively, again, the environment and also the economy. And so that's really the fundamentals of what the Carbon Management Center is all about. And we look at it as a wonderful keyway into the marketplace and the industry partners that we have.
Yeah. And when the energy transitions first started coming into being a popular topic, I've written for Forbes for 10 years now, and this was 3 or 4 years ago, really when the media began to really focus on the energy transition. And it's been apparent to me, having been in the oil industry my whole career, that carbon capture is so fit for purpose for improving the sustainability of the oil and gas industry. Because and one of the reasons, I think, and I wonder about your views on this, is that when you look at what's involved in a carbon capture and storage project, it's basically the same kinds of disciplines, the scientists, the engineers, that many of these companies already have on staff, like ExxonMobil, for example, which is, mounting the huge carbon capture and storage project centered right there in Houston. It already has all the engineers and scientists you need, and drilling, and completions professionals, operational professionals that are also necessarily to mount a successful carbon capture and storage project. I mean, do you see that as well, those synergies in staffing?
Yeah, I sure do, David. And I think, back to your original statement about the energy transition, you know, a lot of people have different definitions of what does that mean?
Yeah.
And as we've defined it in terms of energy sustainability and making that transition to that more sustainable future, it's really sort of the tagline for the Carbon Neutral Coalition. And I know we're going to get that to a moment here, but that's really the fundamentals. And we embrace the idea that there isn't one single answer. There's a portfolio of choices. And certainly some of the things that often get top of mind with people in terms of wind and solar and some of these other renewable pathways, all important, all growing in a big way, but also recognizing from our perspective that over 80% of the world's energy is provided by hydrocarbons. And those hydrocarbons and the carbon intensity of the fuels and the electricity and everything that we're producing from those hydrocarbons, absolutely. I mean, those industries have those talents, have the capabilities. And what troubles me often is that people will define carbon capture as nothing more than a perpetuation of the fossil fuel industry by fossil fuel industry people. Well, that couldn't be any further from the truth. What it is for people to take advantage of their core competencies and capability of the companies that you just mentioned there in those areas where you can apply technology to make a huge impact. And we're talking about that being the scale of the impact and also the ability to reduce those emissions, because we repeat it all the time. It's about the emissions. It's not about the fuel. And if you think about it that way, and you think about how you can move the needle on emissions reduction in the most impactful manner possible, those companies that you just referenced and the businesses that they're in and will continue to be in for at least the next 50 years,
right,
as a society, we're going to require those hydrocarbons. But we also require the transformative technologies to enable those fuels to actually be environmentally responsible. And so you would think it would make sense to everybody. And yet, perversely, in some instances, environmentalists think it's nothing more than a perpetuation of the fossil fuel industry, forgetting completely that the technologies we're talking about are about emissions reduction. And yet, on the other side of the coin, you may have environmental deniers, if you will, those that don't believe that there's anything required to reduce carbon emissions. And that's a challenging group of folks as well in terms of climate science and issues like that. I don't go down that lane. I look at the lane that says, look, here's where the world is going. Here's where the fundamentals of the market are shifting. And for Texas to understand how important it is as an existential threat to reduce the carbon intensity of the products and services that we produce. If we can do that and do it and lead the world, we'll not only help ourselves with our existing products, but we can take that technology and we can move it globally. And now you're talking about opening up new markets and new capabilities all over the world. It's an opportunity for business as much as it is for the environment.
And that's what's, and I think we've had a real evolution in that respect. Is the business world recognizing and understanding now what an opportunity, not just carbon capture and storage, but some of these other technologies present to them just in terms of a business opportunity that can be profitable and sustainable and also improve, their core business and the performance, the sustainability of that. And I know that has a lot to do with the work you're doing at the Carbon Neutral Coalition. My audience will be familiar with the coalition. I've already, in the past, I've interviewed Sean Strawbridge and Susan Combs, who are also on the board of advisors. But Susan, was just had such glowing things to say about the work you're doing there at the coalition. So I wanted to be sure and talk to you next. So talk about, your involvement there at the coalition and the kinds of things you're working on there.
Well, Susan's very generous with her praise. I will say we're all enthused and excited about the leadership that our fearless leader, Corby Robertson, has showed in terms of pulling this coalition together and moving us forward. Let me say something about an item that you mentioned here before I roll into that, though, and that is about the workforce. It's about the workforce of the future. Frankly, that's the group that Corby asked me to lead, was the futures group. How is this all going to evolve, and how do we take all these capabilities and changes into the future and really create the future for Texas? Workforce is a big part of that. And as I've said to many of the students, even here at the University of Houston campus, you know, you don't have to go to work for Google or Amazon to change the world. If you want to really impact the world, you can work in the oil and gas industry. You can work in the hydrocarbon industry in these types of transformative technologies and evolution that are going to actually impact the planet. I would say far more so than some of the other more talked about things that you read about in the marketplace in terms of options for the future. If we're able to decarbonize the hydrocarbon value chain through things like carbon capture and methane conversion and methane emissions reductions and all those things, that's going to be a far bigger impact. You know, the other thing that people don't recognize, almost 60% of the total energy in the world is not electricity. And so when you start thinking about changing the world simply by wind and solar, you're not even touching the larger half of the energy picture in and of itself. Forget about the fact that even in the electricity segment, less than 10% of that is wind and solar also. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with wind and solar. I'm just saying we got a long way to go. And we have a lot of aspects about many of the choices we're making all across the value chain in terms of the life cycle analysis, not just how independently good it is in terms of when the wind is blowing or the sun is shining, but what happens to those facilities at the end of their natural life? How do we decommission those things? Is it really renewable? And I would argue it isn't. No. There's certainly a footprint for everything. And as we look at the hydrocarbon industry, we also have to recognize there is a footprint. And we're taking those steps through the Carbon Neutral Coalition to address how can we decarbonize? That's the operative word. And if we're able to do that and achieve that in that kind of a pathway, that's where we're going to make the big impact.
And the opportunity is just huge in Texas. I mean, I want you to talk about that too, because I mean, the Texas and Louisiana Gulf Coast, really, as far as I can tell from conversations I've had, it represents really one of the two or three biggest potential prizes where carbon capture and storage is concerned on the face of the earth. I mean, it truly is.
David, there's no doubt about that. I mean, a couple of years ago, I was fortunate to be part of the National Petroleum Council study as we looked at all of the United States and all of the opportunity for carbon capture, utilization, and storage. And it was very clearly identified that there were, first of all, it wasn't a technology that was going to be applicable everywhere for everyone, which was a good recognition because what it said is, look, we're not trying to describe this as a silver bullet, but it is an essential part, not an opportunity, not an option, but an essential part of meeting any climate targets. And that's not me talking. It's not the National Petroleum Council. It's the International Energy Agency.
Yeah.
And talking about it in terms of the impact that CCUS will have to be able to meet this. And so one of the results from that NPC study was identifying the key elements for CCUS. And one, you have to have a concentrated amount of emitters, not just a one-off or a onesie and a twosie, but the kinds of scaled amounts of emissions in a rather central area. Secondly, you got to have good infrastructure. You have to have the ability to have the pipes and have the infrastructure in place to be able to move this material around. And you have to have good, excellent, proximal geology that is both permeable, it's safe, and storability of the geology itself to be able to receive that CO2. And if you get that trifecta, which we have in the Gulf Coast in spades, we are one of the preferred areas in the world where investments at scale like this can actually be achieved. And if we do that, we'll not only be making a big impact for us locally in the Gulf Coast, but we'll set the stage for the world as the rest of the world watches us actually achieve something something not just propped up by government funding or a government type of a research investment. This isn't institutional research. This is commercial deployment of the most critical technology, in my belief, of all of the climate mitigation technologies. We've got to do it at scale. No better place to do it than the Gulf Coast, and then take it to places like Shanghai, Singapore, India, Indonesia, all the places where the huge amount of emissions are occurring. And that's the trick here. We got to act locally, but we got to think globally, because that's the way we're going to actually solve this global climate challenge.
Yeah, and the trifecta you talked about, having the emitters, you know, a large number in a very concentrated location, the infrastructure being there, the underground storage space being there. I mean, you just described places like the Houston Ship Channel, for example, the Beaumont, the Golden Triangle area, the Baton Rouge area, Corpus Christi with the port refining.
David, what goes with that? It's not just the geography and those types of indigenous advantages, but then you have a business community and a state that recognizes the opportunity, puts the necessary policies in place to support a nascent industry like this. Look, Texas went completely all in on wind and solar deployment. And where do we stand today? We're leading state in the country in terms of being able to promote those new technologies moving into our marketplace. We have a similar opportunity with carbon capture, utilization, and storage. We'd be foolish not to take advantage of it in terms of leadership, not just in the U.S., but the world. So you're absolutely right. But it's also a match with the kind of policies that the state can bring forward. And then, as you mentioned earlier, and it can't be anything other than top of mind, we've got great people in Texas.
Yeah.
They're smart. They know what they're doing. They've worked in this industry. They have the capabilities to put it to practice. And so I think we've got all of the cards on our side of the table.
Yeah. And you talk about having the policies in place. And, you know, we all like to make fun of our politicians. I certainly do. But here in Texas, when you really look at what Texas has done, I mean, there have been some glitches with the grid and things like that. But overall, over the last 2 to 3 decades, really, the energy policy in the state of Texas has been pretty visionary in a lot of ways. And I mean, you just talked about with wind and solar and going all in on that. And yeah, we lead the whole country in wind power right now. And our solar sector is exploding in Texas right now. And but also with, you know, encouraging oil and gas and being the leader of that. We're the fifth largest oil producer in the world in Texas.
I think it's also fair to recognize from a political and policy standpoint that many of these challenges are now very new. They're coming to the fore as we're speaking, right? And so it's not as if everyone just has a magical answer already. This is an evolutionary process. This is a big reason why the Carbon Neutral Coalition was formed, so that we can be an educational tool to move these areas like carbon capture, utilization, storage forward. What kind of challenges do we have in terms of rights of way, land rights, mineral rights, the ability to actually have the permitting in place for the injection wells that are going forward? The state of Texas pursuing primacy in terms of being able to get these Class 6 wells approved through a process that the state of Texas can be in control of, because we have the capabilities, because we have those smart people. We've made our application to the federal EPA, and I've said it more than once, if we're going to make an impact, we have to get primacy here in the state so that we're not tied up in some sort of a federal queue. We need to have our own queue here in Texas. And for those that are interested in carbon capture, utilization, and storage, not unlike the state of North Dakota or Wyoming, these states have already made that decision, received primacy, and we're not far behind. So we're pretty excited about that. And we're working very closely, not just with the policymakers, but we're also trying to make a strong effort to reach out to the NGO community so that we're doing it right, not just trying to move it forward with an industry focus exclusively, but with a community engagement focus, so that we're really doing the work, having the communities that it impacts engaged and involved. There's upside in this for everybody, You have to understand it. And that's the big part of what our Carbon Neutral Coalition is about. And frankly, what we're doing at the University of Houston, doing that education and making certain people know the facts, not just getting it from somebody on Twitter or something like that with an opinion. We want to have a fact-based approach to what we're talking about.
Yeah, you mentioned a minute ago utilization, which is the letter in CCUS that tends to get lost in discussion too often, I think. Talk about the potential for utilization, not just taking the carbon and putting it underground and storing it, but actually using it to make things. I mean, the potential there is fairly limitless, really, if it can be scaled up and encouraged in the right way from a public policy perspective.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, again, it's about scale and impact. I mean, let me say that we've been utilizing CO2 in Texas for over 50 years. Out in the Permian, we've done enhanced oil recovery for many, many years. Utilized CO2, putting it in formations and producing additional barrels of oil. It's a fabulous way to go. Now, much of that CO2, if we're able to replace what we're currently doing with CO2 that actually comes from these industrial facilities, the term often used is anthropogenic or man-made CO2.
Right.
If we're able to replace that CO2 with man-made CO2, think about this. It might be a little counterintuitive, but if you can take man-made CO2, put it into those formations to produce additional oil, and then in the process, store that CO2. There have been a number of calculations on life cycle that would suggest that next barrel of oil that you produce is pretty close to carbon neutral in terms of its overall life cycle impact. That's pretty important. Now, that really bothers many people in the environmental community because they just want to stop using internal combustion engines and go all electric. But if you really think about it pragmatically, it's an opportunity to utilize CO2 in a big way. We've been doing it for years and years, and I think it's an opportunity to continue to grow that utilization. But here's the other thing. As we get more and more creative, the transformational technology that we develop and deploy becomes more cost competitive. We can produce chemicals from CO2. We can produce materials from CO2. Yeah. We can do things with CO2 that, frankly, previously, we hadn't really thought about it because CO2 really talking about it in terms of, well, so what? We just vent it to the atmosphere. Well, we've recognized now the light bulb's gone off and we've recognized there is opportunity. But hey, look, we've been putting CO2 into things for years. Every time you drink a Coca-Cola, you're ingesting it. And a lot of people would call CO2 a poison, for God's sakes. And you think about the perversity of that kind of thought process. I mean, it's not a poison. It's not something that's going to kill you, but it is something that if we can utilize it and make those plastics and materials and do those kinds of things, we're just doing ourselves a good in terms of being sensible rather than just venting it as a waste.
Yeah. Do you feel like the knee-jerk reaction, opposition from the environmental community to CCS is diminishing over time as this realization? I think there's just a growing realization, even at the IEA now, that demand for oil is going to continue to rise globally for many years to come. We're not going to do this transition in 10 years, like Joe Biden keeps saying. Yeah. Do you feel like, it seems to me anyway, that the intensity of the opposition to CCUS from the environmental community has maybe not lessened, may not be the right word, but kind of shifted in the argument to now talking about, well, but carbon capture really doesn't work, okay? We've got to fix it because it doesn't work right, rather than just opposing it outright. Are you seeing that, or is it just my imagination?
Well, first of all, let me say, I think one of the problems we have generally is we generalize too much.
Yeah.
I think, again, for different communities where CCUS has been deployed, there are various kinds of reactions that are largely driven by the kind of community engagement that occurs or hasn't occurred. We've got opportunities to impact society in a big way. I think generally people are seeing that carbon capture utilization and storage is not an option to be debated, but it's a requirement that has to be be refined. And that is that it be effective. And we've proven through multiple demonstrations and a tremendous amount of investment by the federal government and the Department of Energy, et cetera, to prove out projects, to do the kinds of things that are proven it to be technically and commercially viable, and that it does work. Now, all of that being said, there are some communities where, you know, they see the value and are very quick to move on it. We have a wonderful opportunity right here in Texas at the Petranova facility that people have been pointing at for the last 3 years as a failure. And it's far from a failure. In fact, it's an incredible success story where we've captured CO2 from a coal-fired power plant. We've piped it to an oil field and it worked. Now, that project didn't take advantage of 45Q tax credits. It did get support from the Department of Energy in terms of the installation. But when oil prices went south a few years ago, the project wasn't in the money anymore. Well, it's now been recapitalized. It's going to restart. And we're going to have one of the world scale, fully integrated carbon capture utilization projects in the world operational right here in south of Houston. And it's a great success story. More of that coming because the federal government has also recognized we've moved the 45Q tax credits up. We've enabled commercialization to occur. And again, on the front end of any kind of new technology, that's what the federal government's supposed to be doing. Not propping up industries for 20 and 30 years, but certainly to be able to give that initial momentum to an industry like this. We're seeing that already. And we're seeing a lot of development work going on. It's challenging. It's not inexpensive. Everybody says, well, it costs too much. Look, the energy transition is going to cost no matter what you do. Okay.
Many trillions, yes.
Stop talking about it being something that we're going to do and it's going to be cheaper. It's not going to be cheaper.
No, it's not.
We're going to be spending additional capital. And whether you talk about deploying renewables and all of the additional infrastructure that's necessary and the batteries and the backup and everything else, hey, contrast that with carbon capture utilization and storage. And I would say right now, don't pick one horse. Evaluate everything to its conclusion so that you really know what you're choosing. Don't go down one path blindly and then simply defend it against everything else, but have the openness to understand that you really need to understand all the detail, the full economic analysis, the life cycle analysis of the choices that you're making, and then make the best choice. But in any choice that you make, this whole energy transition is going to cost us all as a society. And I think once we get past that point to understand it, and frankly, that's one of the big challenges globally. Billions of people in the world living in poverty that don't care about their carbon footprint. Okay. So what we need to do is get technology to the point in the developed world that we can take it to the developing world and deploy it so those people can actually get that same uplift and have that same impact. If all we're doing is solving our own problems and patting ourselves on the back and not taking it globally, we haven't done anything. We're just lighting ourselves.
So listen, these half hours go in a heck of a hurry. I just can't believe it. We're already at time. I want to, before we go though, tell people they want to find out more about what you're doing at UH, where they can find you, where they can go look. I know you've got a website set up and that folks
can access. We do have a website, but I'm really appreciate the question that you asked because I think it's what I'm most excited about here recently is we have developed an executive education course on carbon capture utilization and storage. And it's actually taught by many subject matter experts from the marketplace that represent the oil and gas industry, the pipeline industry, the technology industries in terms of carbon capture, a world-class suite of instructors from the marketplace. We've defined it and designed it as a course that you can take asynchronously on, remotely. We are actually giving executive education course credits for this. We'll be releasing this class in early May. Fantastic. And I would expect that the marketing information is going to come out to the marketplace very, very quickly and how people can register. And I think when you see the cast of characters, I'm yours truly is blessed to be surrounded by a bunch of smart people that have been able to put this together. And we're just delighted to be able to offer this to the marketplace. So if I could, I'd like you to stay tuned on that and understand that it will be very, very soon coming out. That's the whole key here. Understanding the entirety of the value chain, understanding the technology and the economics, as well as the policy making. That's what this class is all about. And that's really the formula for real understanding.
Yeah, I might have to sign up for it myself.
Well, I'm gonna take that as a yes, and I'll make sure you get a registration link, David, okay?
Yeah, no, I'm not kidding. And for sure,
neither am I.
Yeah. When it comes, when it goes live, let's cycle back and talk about it.
Good, and get everybody more information.
But thank you. We're done here. Unfortunately, we're over time, but really enjoyed this. And yeah, for sure, we need to track back again. Thank you so much for being my guest.
You can afford to cut and paste whatever you want, but if you're able to keep that last portion of it, David, that'd be great.
We will.
I mean, I'm serious about that. I think it's going to be a rather impactful offering to the marketplace. Yeah. So delighted that you're interested.
We're breaking news here, folks. That's great. All for today. Thank you. Thank you so much, Chuck. I really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again soon. And thanks to the folks at the Sandstone Group for hosting our show and our extraordinary producer, Eric Perel. I'm David Blackman signing off for now. We'll talk to you again soon.